This episode of 365 Days of Astronomy is sponsored by the Education and Outreach Team for the Messenger Mission to Planet Mercury. Follow the mission as the spacecraft helps to unlock the secrets of the inner solar system at www.messenger-education.org.
It's the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast, coming in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast. I'm Bob Hirshon, host of the AAAS radio show and podcast Science Update. For today's podcast, I'm assuming you already have some experience with Google Earth. Fair assumption? Well, most of you seem to have at least tried it, but for the rest of you, I'd like you to pause the podcast right here. Then search for Google Earth, download the latest version to your computer, play around with it for a while, and just so you know what it can do, and then come back and hit play. Go ahead, the rest of us will wait. Okay, welcome back. Has everybody tried Google Earth now? Great. Okay, so you've seen how it creates an interactive 3D world globe that you can manipulate. You can spin it, zoom in on locations pretty seamlessly, and you can look at various overlays that give you more information about the city or geological feature or whatever. You may even know that you can add your own information, your own place marks, even create tours, and then save them and share them with other folks. Well, since one goal of the Messenger mission to planet Mercury is to image the entire surface of the planet for the first time, we thought it would be really cool to take that image data and convert it to KML, which is the markup language that Google Earth uses, and then create a super overlay that goes right on top of Google Earth, but shows you Mercury instead. You may have noticed that Google Earth has a drop-down menu with a little icon of Saturn, and in that menu you'll see Mars and the Moon, and by clicking on those you can see that they've already done it for those bodies, and now we've done it for Mercury. Jason Smith is the web developer and programmer I've been working with on this. He's already created an overlay from the Messenger planetary flyby data, and you can find the link to that at www.messenger-education.org. And now, maybe even today, Friday, he's going to be completing a new high-resolution version using data just released by NASA. I asked Jason to explain a bit about Google Earth from a programmer's perspective.
Google Earth is a way of visualizing map data from a far-out view all the way down to very close details. And the technology behind it is really sophisticated. They've made it possible to render at any point of zoom level a map that represents what's visible at that particular altitude. And the way that they do that is quite interesting.
Interesting in what way?
Well, traditionally what you would do is you'd have a massive amounts of data. And so every time somebody would request a map at a particular altitude for a particular set of coordinates, that map data would be rendered in real time based on the available political boundary vector data and the road map data. And then it would be overlaid with any weather data or traffic data as appropriate. But that requires a significant amount of CPU. It requires a lot of resources for storage, and it can be very demanding. So what Google has done is, rather than rendering everything on demand, they pre-render everything at the various levels that you'd be interested in seeing it at. So you start out with a single large image or a large representation of the data that you're interested in, and you make it the size of the viewable area of the screen. Then at the next zoom level, if someone wanted to get closer to it, what you'd actually do is you take that original source data, cut it in half, and then cut it in half lengthwise. So you've now got four pieces. So if you were to zoom in at the top left of the screen, rather than rendering the entire section, we take just that small subsection and pre-render it at that altitude so that you can get a good view of that. So the advantage of doing it that way rather than rendering it on demand is that now that image or tile in this context can be saved somewhere and pre-saved so that next time you want to view it or anybody else wants to view it, it can be delivered from that tile cache rather than being regenerated.
Now, to create a Mercury overlay of Google Earth, Smith has to generate those tiles and he has to fit them onto the Earth globe, which can present some challenges. For example, the planets are shaped differently.
although Earth is traditionally thought of as a sphere, it's not. It's actually bulging in the center. Mercury is small enough and orbit is slow enough that the bulge is much less. So when you're mapping the data from the Mercury base imagery to a Earth-like planet, the latitude and longitude numbers don't match up exactly. So you have a couple of choices in terms of how you make those numbers agree with what you're expecting to see.
The new high-res overlay that Smith is working on now presented some challenges of its own, partly because the file is so huge.
In our first draft of the Mercury map to the Google Earth project, I had written some tools that helped me with the image registration and the tile slicing. Unfortunately, those tools don't work this time around with the new release of Mercury data, since we've gone from what I believe was 800 megabytes of base map data to 10 gigabytes of base map data. And my poor tools just couldn't handle that upgrade. So I've had to re-attack and refactor to try and address the new storage requirements. And so that's an ongoing process.
So far, we've talked only about the Mercury base map, but Smith points out that Google Earth allows you to do a lot more.
Right. So after you've rendered the map data, you have the opportunity to put anything you'd like over top of it. And that's where the real fun of Google Maps API comes from. In particular, there's a language that describes the objects that you can place on top of a map. And the language is called KML. It's a markup language like XML. And it allows you to describe things like paths, points of interest, image overlays. It'll even do some interactive things like play short animations or play audio.
But since neither Jason nor I are experts on Mercury, or on planetary geology in general, placing the topographic features and points of interest onto the globe was a bit out of our area of expertise. On the other hand, the science team members who are the experts don't have time to deal with KML scripts, so Jason designed a tool just for them.
Since writing in KML can be a little bit archaic and it can be a little accident prone, we wanted to make the process as simple as possible. So we created a web interface where they could add in all of the information about a particular point, maybe add an image or any ancillary information that might pop up with it, plug in a latitude and longitude and hit save. They could keep track of which points of interest they had added to the system, group them, and then automatically behind the scenes, those would be added to a KML file that would be fed to the Google Earth project.
Nancy Chabot at the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Lab is MDIS instrument scientist for the Messenger mission. MDIS stands for Mercury Dual Imaging System, a pair of cameras that image the planet's surface. She and her colleagues used Jason's web interface to select, edit, and place Mercury sites of interest onto the Mercury base map. In addition, we created another set of features called guided tours that also overlay onto the planet. For these, I interviewed the authors of four research papers based on Messenger data that were published in the journal Science. I sent edited audio, a script, and various graphic assets to Jason so that he and his team could create the guided tours.
The tours that we created were also KML files. They are using more advanced features of KML that allowed us to specify paths from one point to another. So we were able to specify viewpoints looking at a particular location and then transition from that viewpoint to another viewpoint. KML also allows us to put objects within our viewable area, so what we use that for is to show pop-ups of regions of interest so that we could overlay audio and allow the scientists that we're interviewing talk about something in particular while we're traveling around the planet.
Hopefully, all of this has gotten you interested in taking a look at this project. If so, go on over to the website www.messenger-education.org and under New and Interesting, look for the link that directs you to the download and instructions page. If Jason is successful and manages to create the file for the new high-res version by today, you'll get a link to that. If not, you'll still see the original lower-res version until a sharper one goes up. A couple of tips, though. You'll want to deselect the entire primary database from Google so that you don't see Earth landmarks overlaid onto Mercury. Or you can just leave that on just for fun. Also, you'll want to go to the View drop-down menu and deselect Atmosphere and Water Surface, since they don't exist on Mercury. If you select Mercury Sites of Interest, you'll be able to view the images and descriptive text of various features that Dr. Chabot and her colleagues uploaded. If you select IAU-USGS Planetary Nomenclature, you'll get little round icons that indicate every named feature on the planet so far, along with detailed information about that feature. When there's more than just one pop-up for a location, clicking on it creates one or more branches that let you click on the particular item you want. Finally, opening the Messenger base map and then Messenger dataset reveals the Guided Tours folder. Double-click on a Tour Play Me button to see it. As I mentioned, the four tours that are up there now feature the authors of recent scientific papers published in the journal Science discussing their work. The tour creation tools are a bit crude, so you'll see some artifacts and kind of general weirdness in some of them, but I think they're still really cool, especially because they let you hear directly from the scientist who did the research. Well, that's it for today's podcast. Please let me know what you think and keep checking back to that webpage because we're going to be adding more cool content over the coming year. Thanks for listening. For the 365 Days of Astronomy podcast, I'm Bob Hirshon.
Additional sponsorship for this episode of 365 Days of Astronomy was provided by iTelescope.net, expanding your horizons in astronomy today. The premier on-demand telescope network at dark sky sites in Spain, New Mexico, and Siding Spring, Australia.
You are listening to the IYA 365 Days of Astronomy podcast.
The 365 Days of Astronomy podcast is produced by Astrosphere New Media Association. Audio post-production by Preston Gibson. Bandwidth donated by Libsyn.com and Wizard Media. Web design by Clockwork Active Media Systems. You may reproduce and distribute this audio for non-commercial purposes. Please consider supporting the podcast with a few dollars or euros. Visit us on the web at 365daysofastronomy.org or email us at info@365daysofastronomy.org. Until tomorrow, goodbye.